Hello and welcome to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep minute by minute into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, John.
And I am Zach.
And we are joined on this Friday episode with our guest who we have held on for way too long to talk about all sorts of things outside of Dune. Dune Navigator Martin.
Hello. I'm just sad that this is ending today.
Well, we have had a wonderful time with you, and I'm sure we will find other ways to bring you back onto the show later on in the future.
Oh, of course.
Yes, please. Except if I tanked all your ratings, then obviously not.
We do this for us.
We don't care what they think. Just kidding. I actually do care a lot.
That said, if you're listening on iTunes, please rate the show positively. That'd be awesome. Thank you.
Even if you need to go back 1 week in terms of episodes, just rate them 5 stars.
Yeah, exactly. No, it has been a blast to hang out, and I think we're going to have some great conversations for this Friday episode. And I am genuinely interested to get your Shai Hulud rating at the end of this, so we can add it to the official ledger.
I did spend more time thinking about it than I think a normal person should.
But we will get there.
Yeah,
we will get there towards the end of this. So let's dive in to minute 119 through 120.
We are 2 hours into this movie.
2 hours into this movie.
That's many hours.
It's at least two.
Yeah.
Hang on. Let me check your math on that. Mentat roll. My eyes roll back into my head. And yep, it's two.
Yeah, cool. Look at that.
So we left yesterday on a little bit of a cliffhanger, not a crazy one, but a little bit. We had this little baby on some black silk looking up at this looming figure. We didn't get to see who the figure is, but he's casting a very large shadow.
There's only one very large man that it could be.
Yes, and the very first scene of this minute is a slightly less rotund Baron Harkonnen peering down.
Is he slightly less rotund, or is he wearing just bigger clothes? Because it looks like he's wearing robes. Well, no, it looks like he's almost wearing like a modified still suit.
No, I think he's wearing Harkonnen armor, like the Raban armor. Like, okay. I don't know what scene, but I immediately I was like, oh, that's so cool that he's instead of
I thought I saw pajamas, like a small tube on it, which is what made me think.
Pain wiring. Pain inducer wiring.
That's his heart plug.
Yeah. Or someone else's heart plug. Just tied to him. Stay close.
No, I thought his face and neck area looked a little...
His jowls.
Yes. I thought they looked a little bit less. And I thought this was their way of portraying that this is a younger Baron.
Okay, maybe. Let me stop you right. How much younger do you think he is?
Well, about a Jessica's age.
About a Jessica's age.
Baron? I had to guess, Jessica was probably bound to Leto the First, the only.
The only.
Probably in the like 17 to 19 range. But knowing Frank and weird ages, probably closer to like 15.
Ooh, this gets spelled out somewhere.
It does?
I cannot remember where.
So canonically, because this we have from the book. So it's not even Dune Encyclopedia. It's not Expanded Universe. This is these ages are coming from Frank himself. Mm-hmm. In one of the appendices of the original book. And if you do the calculation, I think he puts in like date of birth and date of death. But the Baron, when the story begins, and I mentioned that because in the books we do have the 2-3 year time jump and in the movies we don't. But when the story begins, the Baron is 81.
Jeez Louise.
And Jessica is 37.
No.
Okay. So when the story begins, Paul is 15, Jessica is 37, and the Baron Harkonnen is 81. Which, exactly right. If he is one Jessica younger, that means he should be 44.
Okay.
I don't know, like, I don't know if I've ever seen such an unhealthy 44-year-old.
Like, he doesn't come to America, good. you'll see plenty of us.
He doesn't look good for 44 is what I'm trying to say.
You know, the air quality on Getty Prime is pretty rough. So it's a pretty industrial planet.
It's the equivalent of probably smoking like 20 packs a day.
Still, you know, he's the Baron. I would assume he gets, Air Pro.
It's like plus. It's like Spaceballs. He's got Perrier in his drawer.
That is a great reference.
And he has access to, like, you know, squash him mice just to sip out of.
Yeah, of course.
His rat juice box, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So he doesn't look good for 44 is what I'm trying to say. He looks okay for 81, especially in those big-ass pajamas, but...
Mm-hmm. His moo-moos.
Yeah, he's 44. He should be 44 here or around that.
So this does kind of contradict a little bit about how the noble houses they're not like heavy users of spice, but it is available to them. And, they do use it for the geriatric qualities.
Yep. Yeah, they do.
So he should be looking in his 20s right now.
Yes. Especially since, we have plenty of quotes about, I think two quotes about Shaddam, who was... let me peek at my notes. Shaddam, at the beginning of the story, was 57. And I think Irulan mentions that he was looking, no more than 35.
Yeah.
No, sorry. Not even. So at the... Oh, sorry, no. Cut all of this. Because even in the original book, Shaddam has multiple references of age. And one references in the appendix... references him as 57, and I go into the details of why in my article about how old everyone is in Dune on DuneNavigator.com. But there's references from Irulan from within the book itself where she says that he was 72.
Yeah.
Yes, and was looking like he was 35.
Isn't he described as like still having a head full of like red hair and everything too? So it's definitely that like age decelerator in full effect. So
absolutely, like it, but in that sense I feel like if that's how he looked as a 44-year-old, he still looks like that, so it's kind of good. The spice is working.
He kind of hit a plateau and just stayed there for a long time.
Exactly. Just got a little bit more rotund.
Yeah.
So Paul brings us back in with the bombshell. Bombshell of bombshells so far, anyways. Via voiceover, you are the daughter of Baron Vladimir Harkonnen. Did my father know? So I think he's a little pissed at Jessica right now.
Oh, he's absolutely pissed because he feels like his mom has betrayed his family, and he's got a look on his face of like a not like complete anger, but definitely a furrowed brow as he turns up to look at her.
Mm-hmm. How is that her fault? She was just born. She's just a baby.
Well, and
sleeper agent.
So. We know, because we are, outside looking into this universe, that the Bene Gesserit do not know their parentage.
Most of them.
Do not know their parentage. I don't think that's a secret. So surely Jessica would have said, hey, I don't know who my parents are at some point during Paul's life.
Yeah, true enough. But he could have said, he could have assumed that she was lying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, if she's a Harkonnen sleeper agent born to the family, then...
Well, then, okay, if he's thinking that way, there's... For sure, Leto the First did not know.
Yeah, true, yeah. No, that question is weird. I agree with that. But also, the phrasing as well, like, you're the daughter of Baron Vladimir. Like, would you have referred to him as Baron?
He's being dramatic.
Yeah.
He's all about theatrics right now.
The full honorific.
But we get an answer from Jessica, and she says, I didn't know myself until I took the worm's poison. And Paul's frown turns more to a smile at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that has basically been his permission to just turn into a raging cunt. And he says, we're Harkonnens, so this is how we'll survive, by being Harkonnens.
Yeah.
And it's almost like a little, there's like a little bit of joy in that statement that he makes, because he realizes that he can just, you know, be as brutal as they are.
Yeah, I feel like there was an acceptance of the descent.
Yeah.
Like, we always talk about how the whole story is an origin story for a villain. And I feel like this is the moment where he accepts his role and is like, okay, so I'll be brutal. I'll be the villain of the story then. I'll be the bigger villain.
He'll be the villain of the story, and he's the villain of the story with millions of fanatics ready to kill and die for him.
Yeah.
And if you want to put it in the way that Gurney does, he can be brutal now that he's a Harkonnen.
Yeah. He has to be absolutely ruthless to survive.
Yeah.
It makes me wonder, you know, if Gurney Halleck was in the room, what his conflicts
would be. Would have short-circuited.
His internal conflicts would have been just like, you'd just see him start like spazzing out in the corner with Alia.
Yeah, exactly.
Both of them tweaking hardcore.
Yeah, but then again, Alia would have enjoyed it.
Yeah. Now, we don't get to linger here too much longer.
But this is what Alia warned Paul about that would hurt him to the core. I don't think it hurt him at all. It maybe for a moment, until he knew that it was not something that his mother did intentionally.
Accepted it pretty quick.
Yeah.
Maybe she was going off of how Jessica reacted when she got to know it. Because if you think about it, you go through the spice agony, other memory opens up to you, and you look into your mom's other memory folder, and you see her shaboinking with the Baron Harkonnen. That is a traumatic memory.
Watching Gaius Helen Moheim and Vladimir Harkonnen fuck must be terrifying.
Oh, Jesus.
You're in that camp, right? That Moheim is Jessica's mother?
I've accepted it. I don't think it's canonically, like, it's not core canon, but
yeah,
why not?
It's good as, I mean, good in quotations of mom as anyone.
But also on that note, on the notorious GHM, who's, like, when the baby is with, in the scene where the baby is with Vladimir, who's the other figure? Is it
it's one of the, like,
sisters?
Could be.
It could be one of the sisters. It could be one of the Harkonnen, like, attendant.
Sure, but then why is that baby at a Harkonnen place? Because they secured, like, Margot Fenring as well. She secured the genetic line.
Sure.
She's not going to come back to show. Exactly. She's not going to come back to show the baby to Fade. Like, look, me and my husband Fenring wanted to show you your baby.
Me and my eunuch husband wanted to show you your baby.
Like, this scene is, like, I feel like we're getting hit over the head with the fact that Jessica, like, this is the proof that Paul didn't just hallucinate it. It's really their descendant of the Baron.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they're, like, a direct line as opposed to Fade and Raban. But I don't feel like we needed that as an audience. I almost wished that, as Paul was saying this, instead of a baby, we would have watched Jessica's reaction, or even Gurney's reaction for that matter. Like, the scene is weird to me, because why would Bene Gesserit reveal anything about the baby to the Baron? Like, why would he care as well?
I think it's just a shock moment for the larger audience.
Yeah, no,
I'd be like, oh my God, he's related to the bad guy. Paul is the bad guy.
Yeah. I just feel that it could have been a strong, like, you know, show don't tell, but also don't show this.
No, they definitely could have handled it a better way. Yeah.
Yeah, agreed. I don't have anything else to contribute to that. Agreed.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think like what they could have done better. So yes, I do think a Gurney reaction would have been great. Jessica's reaction to it is good. How could they have portrayed that? Yes, Jessica is the child of the Baron without showing them in the same room at the same time.
Just by we believe Paul that he has that knowledge now. And also, I think coming back to what we talked about 2 days ago, the fact that the room is void of color and the color coding, the whole scene in Harkonnen black and white.
Yeah.
I think that's a genius move. And then as we kind of segue into the next scene, again, void of color, kind of showing our descent into Harkonnen-ness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The southern siege that we see, that which, first of all, is cool as fuck in that hollowed out volcano, is definitely like a different part of the planet. The ground is all rocky and everything instead of sand. It's a much harsher environment. And this is the uninhabitable south at its core.
Quote unquote uninhabitable.
Yeah.
So we get a smash cut to this, and we are greeted with some big ol' horn blasts.
Yep, big ol' horn blasts, some rhythmic, like, drumstick clicking sounds. Mm-hmm. Shout out our boy Raul Vega.
That's right, yep.
Because that's one of the things that they, on his socials, he has a video of them recording that.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Very cool.
That's them hitting the trash cans and stuff like that.
Got it. And the camera kind of like crests this hill, and we see these massive craters. I called them craters at first.
But they could be craters. They could be volcanoes. I don't.
Yeah, I think they're
probably craters.
I don't know. I mean, I think it's half dozen one way, six the other, whatever.
We need a imperial planetologist to.
We had one, but no more. But we see like three prominent ones at least in the background. I'm sure there are more. And some kind of structure is carved into the side of it.
It's a big door.
Yeah, it looks like a big door. Just very, 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 very tall. And we get a third horn blast.
Mm-hmm.
We get three horn blasts in this scene.
Three horn blasts for three craters.
That's right. There you go. It's all coming together now. the camera's moving closer to the structure, and we see a very small opening at the bottom. Now, this is relative to the distance. This is a very large doorway, an entryway into this massive structure, but it looks very, very small from like our perspective. And it took me a couple of seconds. And this is not a joke, because I have not watched this movie in full in a very long time. I forgot about this part. It took me a couple seconds to realize that what we're seeing outside the structure are people.
Hmm. Yeah, and a lot of them.
Because there's so many people. It looked like just the ground.
Mm-hmm. No, especially with the kind of the previous couple of seconds where it's just a rocky kind of terrain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like all those heads look like little pebbles. Yeah, absolutely. Same.
Yep. It's so many. I mean, John and I, we like to, when we can, count the number of things on the screen so we can have accurate numbers.
I'm going to say at least 10,000.
At least 10,000? Oh, I was going to go hundreds of thousands, if not multiples.
That's why I said at least.
Okay, all right. Well, there's at least one. So.
Price is Right rules over here, baby.
Yeah. I know, right?
Don't forget, spay and neuter your pets.
Jesus. Rest in peace, Bob Barker. Yes, so multiple thousands, maybe even multiple hundreds of thousands.
Multiple tens of thousands.
Mm-hmm.
Point is, a metric fuckload of people.
A metric fuckton, yes.
Metric conversion for you, of course.
Thank you. The only thing I could think about is, how do you get them fed?
Well, they eat jerky of some kind.
And morsels as well.
Yes, yeah. It's a bunch of spice jerky and spice morsels. I counted no fewer than 100 coffee services going on at this point.
Zach's favorite activity.
And I shut the movie off.
Can you imagine just panning over a bunch of people doing coffee?
Hawk and loogies left and right, baby.
That is disgusting.
Oh, God.
No, absolutely not. So,
by the way, why would you do coffee like that? Why not just, you know, empty one of your catch pockets? Like, you have water available.
Yeah, I don't
literally
know,
just get a tube, squish it out.
We know that urine and feces are processed in the thigh pad.
Yeah, so. But they're processed. So once they get into the catch pocket, it's just clear water.
That's a great point. Yeah, it's it's disgusting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone has to contribute that way, though.
No, I'm sure it's something to do with, like, the ceremony of your own body's water coming from your own body and not a catch pocket. But still, you could just use a catch pocket.
Absolutely not. I've taken up drinking coffee again. I spent a better part of a year without it. Through reasons that I will not say on the show, I have an abundance of coffee beans at my home now. So I was like, I got to get through these. So I've started making coffee. And I use a little pour over. And I got to tell you, every time I make coffee, in the back of my mind, I'm like, this is what those gross motherfuckers are doing out in the desert. Just spitting into this. And first off, the amount of spit that it would take to do a normal pour over is astounding. It's disgusting to think of.
Maybe it's just like a super concentrated, like,
well, it's got to be some kind of like AeroPress situation where they just take a little bit of water and they use pressure instead of like heat for, I don't know. It's gross. I hate it. But I have to imagine that the number of coffee services going on in this gathering is very high. And what a cool sweeping shot this is.
What a way to end this week.
It's just, man, so good. So before we get into ratings, let's go over any kind of lingering notes that we have for this minute. Because we got some heavy, heavy stuff at the beginning. And we got some cool-ass shots at the end, which is genuinely the definition of a perfect minute.
Yeah,
nothing maybe. From my side, no. Again, okay. Just the kind of the what we talked about on Wednesday, mm-hmm. the color coding and how they hearken and coded the scene kind of in advance and foreshadowing what Paul is going to talk about. I thought that's, now that I know, you know, what I'm looking for, I thought that's genius. And then mm-hmm. continuing even into the scenic scene, keeping it kind of black and white with a bit of sepia. So kind of mixing the Harkonnen colors in.
And I think that was on Tuesday's episode where we talked about that for the first time. So the
Wednesday.
I think Wednesday. Yeah.
So the link to that video is going to be on that episode.
But even if someone doesn't want to look at the show notes, the YouTuber's name is Lancelotti. And I think if you just search for Dune color coding, it should come up.
Yeah.
Genius video.
Now, what I wanted to kind of do a little bit of compare and contrast. So coming from the 84 Lynch movie, comparing that to this one here, the revelation of, hey, you're Harkonnens in the Lynch movie comes from a 4-year-old. And I don't know which one's better, honestly.
I kind of like Alia being the one to break the news.
I love little demon Alia in that movie.
Little demon Alia in the sci-fi miniseries, too.
Oh, great.
Yeah. And so one of our jokes before we started making the podcast, and I think we have probably joked about it on the show as well, but was that Tim Blake Nelson was either
there were two unconfirmed spots.
was either
Fenring,
Hasimir Fenring, or was 4 year old Alia. So you have this like 60 year old man playing a 4 year old.
I thought he was supposed to be in utero Alia.
That's even better.
They couldn't get the prosthetics to work right for that one. So
yeah, I do love Alia in any iteration. But this reminded me when you mentioned the Lynch movie. You know what happens in the Lynch movie? Do you remember what happens in the Lynch movie when Paul wakes up from the spice agony?
John, you'd have to know this one.
I think that's when he's kind of has the...
They sniff his hands.
Sniff his hands and like kind of just be like, what the fuck?
No, I think that's when they first encountered the spice. With the
Oh, no, that is when they first encountered... Yeah.
He wakes up and there's nothing in... I can't remember. Maybe I'm misremembering and someone will correct me, but I don't think in the Lynch movie there's nothing about Jessica, nothing about Chani saving him, nothing like that. He takes the water of life. He's kind of bound with a rope so he doesn't spaz out too much, I guess. And then he has this fucking vision. He wakes up. He gets up. I don't know if someone unties him or he just Houdinis himself out of the ropes, but he starts shouting at the sky, "Father, the sleeper,
the sleeper has
awakened!
Father! Father, the sleeper has awakened!"
That's right, yes, of course, the iconic scene.
Such cringe. I hate it so much.
Like, take away my Dune Minute podcast card, like, for forgetting that.
I hate that scene so... I hate that phrase so much. The whole...
has awakened.
The whole sleeper has awakened thing?
Horrible. See, that's where you and David from the Lorehounds would disagree, because he loves that.
That's such cringe.
I think loves is maybe a... strong word.
I view the 84 Lynch movie, and this is nothing new that we haven't said before, but it is, if you view it as a great bad movie, then you can have a lot of fun with it.
No, I love it. Like, I love so much about it. I love the weirding module. I love, you know, my name has become a
Shaw!
Like, yeah. I love all of that. I love Alia in it. I even love the internal monologues, because I feel like, mm-hmm. You know, there's so much of it in the books, and like, how else are you going to tell us what all of these people think and feel? So I love a lot of it. I just don't love this, and especially because it has become a meme, and like, people associate Dune with it. The sleeper has like, no, even like, I'm okay with The Spice Must Flow,
sure,
which is not. Yeah, I'm searching in my databanks. It's not a book thing. It's a Lynch thing. The Spice Must Flow.
I think it's like tangentially referenced from the books.
Because
they talk about you know, the spice production must be kept up and
yeah, sure, like but that. Like as a phrase, like beam me up, Scotty. It was never a phrase in any of, just to come back to Star Trek. It was never a phrase in any of the actual episodes. It's something that kind of mandala affected itself into our culture. And there's a lot of these, like, no, I am your father. I think there's also kind of, that's not the actual phrase that Darth Vader uses. So same, like, the spice must flow is actually the phrase, but it's not from the book, but everyone associates it with the book. Yeah. And I'm fine with that, but the sleeper has awakened, especially with the new video game. Like, I love Dune Awakening to bits, but since a lot of it is kind of... a lot of the storytelling is structured around the sleeper must be awakened. I'm like, fuck that. No.
I would assume your character in Dune Awakening is a Bene Gesserit background.
Oh, of course it is.
The one that I made was Mentat background.
I have not played.
I went through the character creator, and then the more that I saw about it, the more I was like, I know I'm not going to like this. And it, you know, it's nothing against the Dune part of it, it's just those base building survival games were just not, that's not my cup of tea.
I'm lucky enough to play with a friend who's like, this is not his, like, this is my first any kind of survival game or multiplayer game. Like, I'm a single player kind of guy. So he knew a lot of the logic of what's going to happen, and he kind of both guided me and maybe pushed me through a lot of the game, because I started building bases and I like spent 40 plus hours on my first base. And he built a box, and he was like, I'm sure they're going to have us demolish the first base because we'll need to move to a different region. And they did.
Yep.
Oh, and geez, 40 hours of my time. Don't worry, because the second base, I also spent like 40 plus hours to build up because I wanted to make it pretty. And then we moved from there as well. So, but I like,
well, it's got
to
look good.
Yeah. Like, but it's a good, like, I have zero kind of video game experience in that sense, but I enjoy it. And the amount of Dune that is actually lore accurate is surprising and surprisingly tight. Like, I was very, whoever did the kind of canonical overview of it, like, they did a really good job. There's a couple of nitpicky things like I pick up on, but 98% of the stuff is like canonically correct, and even like throwaway references that you would forget as you read them, they're used correctly in the game. So I'm a fan.
Nice.
I really liked the video that you threw together for us on Blue Sky.
The Bindu Sprint?
Talking about the Bindu Sprint.
Yeah. Laid out a second to second running through the desert.
Man. Oh, God.
Well, gents, how about we rate this week?
I think we let our guests go first.
I think so.
Oh, Jesus, I'm so anxious about an incorrect score here.
There is no correct score. This is your number of Shai Hulud's that you want to choose to give.
Yes, but
this
then
week
I'll say something and people will judge me, and I'm too old to give a fuck.
I don't read.
And that's the point. You don't give a fuck. So
no, I'll let you in a little secret. I don't read the emails.
That's not true.
That's a joke.
We got a very lovely email this weekend.
We did. Okay. A fan is coming
Don't dox them.
Yeah. We got a very lovely email.
Dox them.
We don't need to say anything more than that.
I was going to say I gave Atlanta restaurant recommendations.
All right. Spicy. Okay.
God, John, I know how this works. Anyways.
Yes. So as I mentioned before, I definitely spent more time thinking about this than any normal person would or should.
Yep.
Because I wanted to make sure that I really give it a score that I can live with. And so I feel like these last 5 minutes encompass a pivotal moment. Like, this is, we talked about that this is a point of no return in the story. This is when the fate of the universe is sealed for, like, the foreseeable future for the next couple of decades at least. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as Golden Path approaches, for the next couple of thousand years. And all
and it's
of...
it's only going to get worse.
Exactly. And all of that starts here, with Paul making the decision to drink the water of life, or else in the movie, someone telling him that he should. So this is the moment when, you know, Peter Parker gets bitten by the spider, where Bruce Wayne loses his parents, where Luke Skywalker loses his aunt and uncle, where, just to keep it DS9, Commander Sisko meets the prophets and becomes the emissary of Bajor, of the prophets for the Bajorans.
You guys are such fucking nerds.
So are you in the Bajor camp or the Bajor camp?
Bajor.
Because they go back and forth. They flip-flop.
They
back and
do,
forth so
and it's
times.
Weird, especially since I know you mentioned this a couple of episodes ago, that in Star Trek they had this cardinal rule of whoever said it first, that's the correct pronunciation. Everyone should say the same.
Yep.
So anywho, this is the height of the movie. And even if you haven't read the books, even if all you've seen is these two movies, you have a good understanding, because you get by plenty of references that this is the moment when Goku went Super Saiyan, and now he's gonna go and smash some heads in, right? He's gonna beat the odds now. This is the height of the movie. So initially, I thought this is like an 8 or a 9 for me.
Oh, okay.
But then, on the other hand, it makes little sense on how we got here. Mm-hmm. Like, the characters didn't want to be here. Paul didn't actually make the decision to be here. Chani didn't make any decisions about saving him. Like, there's no agency of the main characters. Like, Jessica mm-hmm. told Chani to do it. So I really can't think of, like, I can maybe think of one or two scenes that are more kind of crucial and amazing than this one, or this one should be. And but because of these detractors, I'll go for like a six and a half or a seven. Like, I do think that it's still a fucking cool scene. The music when Paul wakes up, like, it, just thinking about it gives me shivers. Like, literally, it's just the composition of the scenes, the fade to black with Jessica and Paul, the work with the color coding that we talked about is just amazing. But it's also a scene where kind of all the changes that they did previously suddenly come crashing down on us, because it seems like they weren't thought through when the changes were made. So, long story short, 6.75, something like that.
Yep.
I think that is extremely fair. That's
about where I sat with it, too, in that 6.5. And to all of your points, you know, and like we've talked about in previous weeks, all of the changes that they made are only going to compound more and more with, you know, how our scores are viewing the rest of this movie, I think.
Yeah. For me, this should be an 8.
It should be a 9. This is like this and next week are like the moments, right? And, you know, it.
So, but yeah, it should be up there. It should be up there because there's so much awesome, like, just lore heavy weeks. And we've talked about this before. If a week of minutes that we cover happens to be a particularly lore dense week, those tend to get a lot higher ratings from us, because we just talk, we get to yap and yap and yap about all this stuff. And that's awesome. So this should be an 8 or 9, you know, up there on the high end of the range, but they left so much out. Uh-huh. And this, just what you were saying, John, is like, this is the, we're seeing all these things that are left out compounding upon themselves. And it's just, it's so evident here that aside from, you know, looking straight into the camera and telling you what's going on, they just really held our hand the whole way through this thing. And while I understand why they did that for the general audience, it leaves the people who love this very beloved sci-fi universe, it kind of leaves them going, do we really need all that? So I was going to go straight 5. Of the lower half of this, or the end of this movie where the scores are going to be consistently lower, I do think that this is going to be a high point of the low point, if that makes any sense.
I will disagree with that.
Okay.
I think next week is my personal high point.
So you're disagreeing with my opinion and saying that your opinion is correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fuck you, man.
like spoilers for our Shy Haludes for next week, but yeah.
No, I mean, I think they could have more than one high point. I didn't say the high point. I said a high point.
Oh, I thought you said the high
point. No, I said a high point. Oh, okay. A high point.
My bad. You can go ahead and cut that all out.
Hell no.
I know you won't.
Hell no.
Because you're editing these ones.
Yes. So, yeah, 5 for me. It could have been so much more, but it wasn't. What we had was fine. It was just like straight down the middle. Good. Fine. I think... I'm glad I'm not rating our conversation about it, because that conversation would be 10 out of 10.
Well, obviously.
But we...
Perfect 5 out of 7, if you ask me.
Perfect 5 out of 7. Oh, that's a deep internet lore.
Yeah, that's an old one.
Is it deep?
It is an old one. Yeah.
It's an old one, but it checks out.
All right, great. Well, John, take us out. And we got a good set of minutes coming up next week too.
Yes, like you're saying. We have a fantastic set of minutes coming up next week. Martin, it has been an absolute pleasure having you on the Dune Minute.
Such a pleasure.
We've had a lot of fun, and I'm very much looking forward to talking all about Children of Dune with you later on next year.
Yes, please.
But
spoiler, I don't know if we've actually said that.
We've talked about doing the sci-fi miniseries. Okay, all right. If we haven't, there you go. Also to the one guy on Blue Sky who keeps asking us to do the sci-fi miniseries. I forget what his at is, but
we're going to do it.
We're going to do it.
We're going to do it.
Give us some time.
Minute by minute.
No. Oh, fuck that.
Absolutely not.
No, we're going to do one episode per episode of the miniseries. Like, chill out. I'm not doing, what is it? Oh, God. It's like
4.5 hours per, so 9 hours total. 4.5 hours
per, yeah, 9 hours total. Absolutely the fuck not.
So that's what? 540 minutes worth of content. Is it? Yeah, 10 hours is 600. Yeah, 540 minutes worth of content.
Stop.
So that's wait. That would be if you do it week by week. Wait, I'm trying to calculate how many years of content that is for you guys.
Just sounds like so much editing to me, and I don't want to do that.
If we had a paid producer on this show, and if we made money off this, I would entertain that. But no.
Oh yeah, that would be a steady stream of income.
I would like to have my weekends back, please. Anyways, that is going to be it for this week. The Dune Minute persists online outside of the podcast, though. You can find us
somehow
on Blue Sky.
We survive.
Yeah, somehow the Dune Minute returned. You can find us online on Blue Sky at DuneMinute.com. You can find Martin on Blue Sky at Dune Navigator Martin. Or is it just Dune Navigator?
DuneNavigator.com.
Yeah. DuneNavigator.com.
Check out the Substack. Check out his weekly articles. They're so good. I know we said that earlier in the week, but man, I'm going to say it again. They're so good. Yeah. Such a
appreciate
great
it.
Martin, once again, it's been a pleasure. We will see. I guess you'll hear our next week's episodes when they come out. For everyone else, we'll see y'all on Monday.
All right. See you then.
See ya.